May the words of our mouths, the meditations in our hearts, be always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. This is the last of a little series that I'm doing as a teaching on Sunday morning here, dealing with the problems in the Near East. And some people might have raised the question, why would this be appropriate to do in church as a Christian church? Well, the answer, I think, to that is clearly when our nation is in the problem of making decisions, then some of these decisions have moral dimensions to them, and they have a sense of right and wrong about that, and the church needs to sometimes speak its mind to the nation, our nation. And so that gives us an appropriateness to this as long as it's not really overdone. And I think it's extremely important, which I hope to do, as I have done in the past with other subjects, when I give my own personal opinion, which may deviate somewhat from what the church teaches about this currently, that I tell you so you'll know that. And then when we meet after church in the little room there, our library room, and you can come in there and tell me how wrong I was. And I will respect that. So let's start off with just a quick review of something that we ended up with last week, and that is, why do so many of the people in the Muslim countries seem to have hatred for the Western world and the United States now in particular? And I've made a list of those things, items that seem to be reasons why they do. And I want to say right off the bat that there are a lot of these are justifiable reasons. They have good reasons behind them. And we need to deal with that in our strategic planning. And it, in a way, it kind of begins in the 10th century when the Muslims had taken over Jerusalem and they discovered what they considered to be the place where Abraham was taken up into heaven. And there's a big rock there on top of the mountaintop. And they built a mosque on that, and it's called the Dome of the Rock. And at that time, the Muslim leaders all over the world, they've made a pronouncement that the work of Muhammad was the final revelation of God. And it superseded Moses, it superseded Jesus, and Muhammad was the last word from God, and that's the final word from God. And that was important. And therefore, the Muslim people have had an impulse all along to say, we are the answer. And yes, Moses had some good things to say, and God was with Moses. Yes, Jesus had some good things. And Muhammad said this about these people, and he respected them, and so forth. But now that their Muslim leaders were saying that with Muhammad and the Quran, this supersedes what's in the Bible, although what's in the Bible is mostly true, they would say, but not the final word. The final word is in the Quran. That's important, and that radiates through the Muslim culture all these centuries long, and I have mentioned this several times to you all. These people are not ignorant of their history. Some of the people in the tribes in Saudi Arabia are maybe not be too much informed with some of these, but if you get over into Pakistan, into Iraq, into Lebanon and all of these people, and coming across North Africa into Egypt. These are highly educated people, and they know their history, and their history is in their blood, and this is important for them. Then in addition to this, from the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th centuries, when we were in what we call the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages here of Western civilization, as I mentioned before, Charlemagne, who was one of our Western emperors at that time, he couldn't even sign his own name. He couldn't write. He didn't know how to write. He didn't know how to read. And that was the level of the culture. These people, on the other hand, created universities. They were the probably the most informed people in the whole world. I can't speak for China because I don't know that much about the people in China. Maybe they do. But as far as the Middle East is concerned and into Western civilization, they were superb in the field of medicine, in the field of mathematics, in the field of astronomy. And they, as I mentioned to you last week, this is sort of startling to think about it. One of our great scholars of the Middle Ages, even though it was a pretty not very scholarly time for our culture, Thomas Aquinas, who wrote the big textbook that the Roman Catholic Church uses very much even to this day, they taught Thomas Aquinas all about Aristotle. He had never heard of Aristotle. He was that much in the dark, as it were. And they knew that, and it came through Spain, and the Muslim people over there taught the Jewish people. At that time, they were fairly tolerant of Jewish people and Christian people, and then the Jews taught some Christians in Spain who then brought it over to people like Thomas Aquinas. And Thomas Aquinas then wrote his Summa Theologica, is all shaped around the thinking of Aristotle, but it's applied to Christianity. Now, that high civilization is still in their memory. Very important that it is. And they say, you all, when you all were in your dark ages, we were in the height of knowledge, and we want to retain that and get it back again. And we want you to respect us because we have this illustrious past. And that is very true. That is very true. Then the Crusades came along, and they had taken over all of that country. And then so in our Middle Ages, we organized over 200 years, a series of about six or seven armies, about maybe 50 years apart, but they would go down into Palestine and attack these Muslim places and recapture them for Christianity. But then the Muslim people came back, and eventually they took them back, and we lost everything that they did there. But the Crusades, they remembered, and they hated it because we attacked them then. I have to say, as a footnote here, unfortunately, on several of the Crusades on the way down, we attacked every Jewish synagogue we could find. That's a shameful part of our history, but we did. And to show you the naivety of our culture at that time, somebody organized a group of children, and this is called the Children's Crusade. And they went down to the Mediterranean Sea, and they said, if we pray hard, when Moses was alive, God opened up the Red Sea and let them out. So God will open up the Mediterranean Sea and let these children cross. And the children drowned. But that's the naivety of our culture at that time. Now the big push comes at the end of World War I. At the end of World War I, the then leading Muslim force was the Ottoman Empire, and it was located in Turkey, what is now Turkey. And unfortunately, the Ottoman people, the leaders of the Ottoman Empire, sided with Germany. And so when Germany went down at the end of World War I, so did the Ottoman Empire went down. And I mentioned to you last week that the person who was the head of the state in the Muslim countries is called the Caliph. And the Caliph is a combination of a religious, he would be like the Pope and the Emperor. And so when we won that war, we abolished the Caliph. And they had no more leader anymore. It was like destroying it. Now, that still burns in their desire to reestablish the Caliph And every once in a while, if you listen carefully in your news programs on television, they will mention from these Muslim countries the desire to reestablish the caliph. And that means we're going to get back a seat of power, a combination of earthly military power with our religion. They have no such thing as the separation of church and state at all. Then the other thing that burns in their heart as anger toward us is that when we began in the 18th centuries and the 19th centuries, and we began in the Western civilization, began to really blossom and get strong, then, particularly out of England, we sent missionaries to this part of the world to convert them from their terrible religion. That's what they thought of it, as being a bad religion, the Muslim religion. And the missionaries went over there. And they said, "Why are you trying to convert us to an inferior religion? Your religion is okay, but Muhammad is the last of God's prophets. And we have the final word from God. And therefore, if you were smart, you would become a Muslim. And why you get these missionaries out of here? They hate them." Now, the last thing that burns in their anger toward us is Israel. I'm going to say a word about that right now. Israel was an idea. It was called the Zionist movement in Germany in around 1870. And the German rabbis in Orthodox Judaism wanted to go back to Zion to establish the kingdom of David in Palestine. And finally, the British people listened to that. And in 1917, they had what they called the Balfour Declaration, which passed the English Parliament. It wasn't enacted then, but it was passed. It was on record, they wouldn't do it. And in that, they said, there will be a state, an organized nation called Israel in Palestine with its own territory. Then there will also be a piece of land given, equal piece of land, given to the Muslim people in Palestine, and it will be a Palestinian state. And then the third item of this declaration, Balfour Declaration, was that Jerusalem would be an interdenominational city under the control of the League of Nations. Well, all of that fell apart in the 20s, but it was revived in World War II. And in 1948, officially, England declared that there would be a piece of land called Israel in Palestine. Well, but even before that, you see, the Jewish people were persecuted by Russia almost as much as Hitler murdered 6 million Jewish people. The rest of them fled, and they went in 1946 and 7 and 8 and 9. The Jewish people from Russia, particularly the Eastern people in Russia and in Poland and places like that, where they were persecuted very much, most of Hitler's gas chambers were in Poland, not Germany. He didn't want them there. But these people then went and got on any kind of boat that they could find and simply went and swam ashore in Palestine and occupied the land before it was done. This was so frightening that England tried to stop it, and they couldn't stop it. They were coming. The Jewish people said, "Finally, Western civilization has given us a land." Then England finally, in 1948, turned over the Balfour Declaration to the League of Nations. Now, what were we doing with that? Why did we do that? Now, this is my opinion. I think Western civilization had over the centuries built up a huge amount of guilt as what we did to Jewish people. We created the ghettos. They didn't create the ghettos. And even the Pope allowed the establishment of a ghetto was a place where Jews were required to live. And we did that in Western civilization. And as far as they are concerned, as far as the Jewish people are concerned, when Hitler killed it, that's part of the whole Western culture. My own opinion is that the establishment of the nation of Israel comes out of the guilt of Western civilization for what we have done to Jewish people over the centuries. Come to the class afterwards and tell me I'm wrong. I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'll tell you, maybe. Now, with that kind of hatred for us, many of you, including myself, when 9/11 happened, we said, why are on television, why are people who are not active terrorists, why are they dancing in the street? And one of the leading person who was not a terrorist himself, this is what the thief did, what he said and published right after 9/11. The day, listen to this, the day of our humiliation is over. We are finally back with power. And the burning of the towers, two towers in New York City, was evidence that we're back on the scene of history with strength and might. The day of our humiliation, put that word, is over. And that runs through their culture so strongly. Of course, there are many people of Muslim faith that just hate the fact of the terrorist plots that they do. But yet many of them like that, and many of them in the same their families will volunteer to go and help the terrorist people. And you may wonder, you say, well, why can't they just get over that? You know, this has occurred to me. Do you realize that we have, I'll show you an example how people can be so humiliated by defeat that anger burns in their heart for a long, long time. Do you realize that Emmett Till, right here in Mississippi, was killed by several white men who then bragged about the killing? The culture in our beloved Mississippi at that time of the trial of those people, there was not a single person on the jury that voted them guilty. And they were let free and then went to Texas and bragged about killing that black boy from Chicago. On a little lighter side than that, I was a priest when I was a young priest in New Orleans, and I had married a girl then who's now deceased, but she was from a little town in southern Arkansas, Waldo, Arkansas. And then when I was at a school in New Orleans teaching Episcopal school, and the bishop sent me to Vicksburg. And so when I was telling my in-laws in Arkansas, said, Ms. Jones, isn't this wonderful? We're going to be half the distance. We're close to where you are. That was her answer. Said, now, you know, Vicksburg surrendered in 1863, the same month that Gettysburg was lost. So Vicksburg and Gettysburg in the South was lost. I said, Ms. Jones, aren't you glad that we're closer to you up here? Her answer, they lost the war. meaning the people of Vicksburg surrendered. That shows how, in a sense, burn humiliation. You see now what's behind that guy's statement, the day of our humiliation is over. Well, we have no over, although some people still keep their Confederate money and have their Confederate flag. They won't do that. What do they want to have happen? Here's what they want. And this was written when Osama bin Laden declared war on the United States. Here was his declaration: that you remove every military base that's in any Muslim country. Get all of your military people out of there. Now, see, we've got to load them in places like Kuwait. Secondly, that you have no Christian or Jew in Saudi Arabia, because that's holy ground. That's where Mohammed lived. That you are totally abandon your support of Israel because they don't belong here. And you do not own the oil. You see, at first, Standard Oil of California owned most of the oil in Saudi Arabia. The government of Saudi Arabia, partly in response to Osama bin Laden, took it back and told the Standard Oil Company, from now on, you can buy the oil, but we own all of that. And they took it back. That's what he wanted to have happen. Now, let me turn the page here. What has been our reaction to that? What has been generally our response from our government, and supported to some degree by the Episcopal Church and other Christian churches? What is our policy? You can put it into two categories. One is that our policy has been that we have had a very idealistic assumption that everybody in the world, if given a chance, would want a democracy just like we have. Everybody would want a democracy. And everybody has human rights. It's written in our Declaration of Independence, mainly. And there's no really reason for anybody to want to go to war except for defense, not for aggression. And that viewpoint has been, you still hear it when people from the State Department are talking about all of these things. We're just giving them the opportunity to have a democracy. And as long as we come in there and provide the opportunity and give them instructions about what a democracy is, then they will certainly reach out and thank us for it. That's the first thing. The second thing is not so idealistic. And it came from Dr. Kissinger, who still dominates a great deal of our policies in the country, foreign policy. And his was the idea that you have to balance the powers all around the world. And you keep them in a balance so that nobody is going to get out of hand. And therefore, what we have to do is back, never mind who they are, but we have to back somebody who's about ready to lose power, and that will tilt it too much in the other direction. And do it. And we have done that. We have done that. That's one of the reasons why we have supported, over the years, we've supported the Shah of Iran for years. You don't realize that until the people over there threw him out. Excuse the word here, but it's so good. I think this was Ronald Reagan who said, "Don't you know the Shah of Iran is a dictator?" His answer was, "I know he's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch." Now you see, that's where you get Kissinger's notion of the balance of power. We've done the same thing with Egypt and other places where we have backed. We've done it with the king of Saudi Arabia. Osama bin Laden wanted to dethrone the king of Saudi Arabia, but he said, wait until we have finished with America, and then the king there will fall automatically. Well, the notion of giving them democracy has not worked. And we have ended up not understanding that. I think my own opinion is it is understandable. They have no background in democracy. And they want their establishment of a caliphate more than they want democracy. And if you will look, some 20 years ago, I think it is, that France, who controlled Algeria, set them free, and they wanted to teach them democracy. So they voted over there. And you know what they did? They voted for what amounts to the Taliban. They voted for the extreme Muslim people who didn't want democracy. They wanted to put the Islamic law in place everywhere. That's called Sharia. And so what happened then? The military took them out of office. This was democracy. You have one vote, and you vote for tyranny. You vote for this. You vote for a militant type of Muslim world. Now, this is what, look at, when the spring revolts were going on in Egypt, what was the people on our news programs telling us all the time? Oh, we got to support the people in the street. We had supported Mubarak, the dictator of Egypt, for years. And his military was behind him. And then when we finally toppled Mubarak, and the street people, we thought, good, there, now we're going to get democracy here. They voted. And they elected the Muslim Brotherhood to office. They knew what they were doing. Mubarak had outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood for 25 years, and most of the leaders were in jail. But when the spring uprising took place, they were let out of jail. Mubarak was arrested. And then Mubarak took the Constitution that the United States helped them write and tore it up. He literally tore it up. So we don't need that. And if you turn to Syria, we don't know exactly what to do, who to support over there. We have supported the king over there for years. And every time we do that and then the people rebel against that, then we say, oh, they're going to get democracy. We better switch over and support them. And it doesn't work that way. When they vote to put in strong, militant type of Muslim world. Now, I'm going to give you quickly conclusions that I have reached. And I'll tell you one thing. I have often said that I think back when I was 20 years old, if I wasn't going to be a priest, I would have been a politician and run for office. I would have never gotten elected. And here's why. My conclusion about what we ought to do over there, and I want you to come in that little room over there and tell me how bad this is. Because I'm not comfortable with all of it. But number one, and I'm going to end up with this. I think we ought to immediately get free of all need for Near Eastern oil. Open the pipeline, drill oil wells off of our coast, and then in 2 years we could probably be totally independent of any need for energy. And people, as far as the United States is concerned, oil is our only vital interest in that area. There's nothing else that we absolutely have to survive. And in 2 years, if we did the right thing, we could be free of their oil. So this is what I would do, first of all. And we got to have the oil now. So if they were going to shut off all the oil, we might very easily go to war, or find an excuse to go to war. This would eliminate that. Secondly, I think they have a point. If they don't want our military bases there, we ought to get them out. Now we thought, oh, well, Turkey is sort of like, belongs to the Western culture. No, it doesn't. The recent elections in Turkey, the militant Muslim faction has taken control of everything except the top leadership. And they will do not, we cannot fly an airplane over Turkey now. That's what they want, and we shouldn't do it then. We ought to take all of our military bases and move them out of there. And even if the king, like in Kuwait, he would say, oh, you can do that, we shouldn't do it. If the masses of people, in a sense, don't want, if it's part of the origin of the hatred for us, let's not do it. We don't need to do it. Number three, I think we should say to all Jews and all Christians, you do not have the blessing of the United States to live in Saudi Arabia. If that's what they declare is their holy land, there's a lot of places in the world you can live. So get out. We can't make them get out, but they're on their own if they stay. And very likely, if history repeats itself, they're in danger of their lives. But I think our State Department ought to say, don't go there if you're a Christian or a Jew. Now, what are the Coptic Christians who are being slaughtered right now in Egypt, southern Egypt, up the Nile River? I don't know what to do about that. I don't have any answer to that. If you ask them to leave, that's their home. That's where they were born. They have, in a sense, do they have a right to be there? Yes, but I don't think that we have a right to send military forces to make sure they're safe to be there. A lot of people would take a different viewpoint. I would say now, my own opinion, I would take all intervention in local squabbles there. For instance, the Shia and the Sunnis are right now in Iraq, back at each other's throat. You don't see it in the news very much, but it's nothing for to see 100 people have just been killed in Iraq, and we thought we had put in a democratic government. No. What is it? It's Shia and Sunnis killing each other. And if you ask anybody, even State Department people, what's behind the Shia and the Sunni killing each other? I don't know. Leave it alone. It's not our business. Now I'm saying back away from that. Don't get involved, broiled in it. And the last one, which you will find one of the reasons I would never get elected. Tell Israel, we love you, we have given you money, we've given you weapons, you're an established country, you're probably stronger than any single Muslim country over there, you're on your own. And we're telling the Muslim world that that Israel is not our ward, it's not our obligation to go to war to protect Israel. Now we'll get back to Jesus next week.